Okay, good morning, good Erev Shabbos. Welcome back to the now Maharal Shir on the Parsha. We are learning this month in the Kolel, in the month of Elul, we're learning L'Refua Shlema for Rafael Moshe Elimelech and Basha. Taka needs a serious refua, so we should have that in mind as we learn. The week of learning was sponsored by Dr. Ronnie and Cheryl Nagel. There are a few yard sites in their family. You can look at the graphic if you want to see. And this Shir today in particular is sponsored, is a very meaningful sponsorship, more because of the people than the message, but it's sponsored by Rabbi Daniel and Panina Mezzi. Rabbi Mezzi is a Rebbe of mine. He was a Rebbe of mine in high school. He remains a Rebbe of mine. We're still very close, even from far away. And he sponsored today's shir in my honor and the honor of Rabbi Pear, who is a classmate of mine in high school. So we appreciate that very much. It's a meaningful personal sponsorship for us. So the parsha, this week's parsha, Parsha Kisetze. Again, if you missed last week, either if you're here with us or if you're listening online, if you missed last week, so last week we did discuss Parsha Shoftim, but even more so, I think the first 2/3 of this year were really about the Maharal in general, or an introduction to the idea of who the Maharal was, a shtickle biographical, just slight biography, but even more so about what Sfarim he wrote about the Sefer Gur Aryeh, which is the main focus of our study in this weekly shir, and the general Sfarim and how we're going to approach developing his themes throughout the parshios Pesiyat Deshmaya V'Lineder. So if you need that reference, you'll go back to last week's, you'll listen to it. But this time we'll jump right into the meat of things. So if you look in source number one, we have the psukim in our parsha in the very beginning, Kiseitze. The psukim tell us about the case of the ben sorer more. Ki el ish ben sorer more. You have a child, a son, who is wayward, who's rebellious. He's not listening. He doesn't listen to the words of his parents. He disobeys. They grab him. They take him to a beis din. They warn him. They say to the beis din, this son of ours is sorer umore. He doesn't listen. He's eats. He's indulging in his taivos. He's a terrible child. Pasuk chavav urgamu kol anshe iro ba'avanim. So the entire city, so to speak, comes out and stones him. Vameis, and he dies. And it should be a very public misa of this young child. Now the Gemara in Sanhedrin has a whole parak devoted to this topic, parak ben sorer amore, the 8th parak in Masechah Sanhedrin, a very fascinating sugyas over there. So one of the things that comes up in the Mishnah there is that the ben sorer amore, in reality, he hasn't yet done anything to deserve a chiyuv misa. He hasn't yet, I don't know, whatever, violated Shabbos that he should get skila. He hasn't yet committed ritzicha that he should be killed. He hasn't yet done any of the classical averos that demand a chiyuv misa. So in that sense, it's kind of quirky. It's kind of strange. It's kind of shocking, honestly, that we kill him. That we kill him with skila at this point in his life. So the Chazal tell us in Rashi quotes for us, you have it on the page here, indented in Rashi's script, Uven sore umore neharag al shem sofo. That the ben sorer more is being killed almost preemptively, meaning the Torah, as the Rashi continues here, higia Torah sof daito. The Torah understands where this is heading. We see the trajectory this child's on. We see where it's all going. We see that if you start down this path at this age, so close to bar mitzvah, you're already so obsessed with these indulgences that you're giving into, you can't listen to any authority. So it's obviously heading down a path of sofo lelastim as abrios. He's going to end up being a murderous robber of sorts, and we have to kill him in advance. Amr Torah, the Torah says, Yamus Zakai Val Yamus Chayev. Let him die now, when he's not yet at that point of Chiv, at that point of being obligated to Chiv Misa. Let's kill him ahead of time, so it shouldn't come, it shouldn't devolve to a situation of Chiv Misa later in his life. So here, the Gur Aryeh, if you have in this, the first, you know, source under the Parshios over here, in source number one, the Maharal, in his Sefer Gur Aryeh, has a comment on this Rashi, a very famous discussion. He quotes the Kasha of the Re'eim. The Re'eim was bothered that we have a famous Gemara in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, a Gemara that we're all going to try to invoke in a few weeks when we're sitting on Rosh Hashanah, trying to tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu to forgive us, even though we're in the future, we're going to do more averos. In the past, we've done averos. We use the term of Ba'asher Husham. Ba'asher Husham is a term which refers to the fact that Yishmael was on the precipice of death. He was almost going to pass away. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu was, so to speak, debating whether he should save him. And the Malachim said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, get rid of this guy. This child who's Asid, his children, Asid Lahamis Banecha, his descendants are going to go ahead and kill the Jewish people. They're going to be the biggest enemies of the Jewish people, Yishmael's descendants. Get rid of him now. Cut him off at the root. Why should we save him? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I don't care what's going to happen in the future. V'heshev lahem in the bold over here in the second line. V'heshev lahem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ba'asher husham. No, we judge a person as he is right now. We don't look towards the future and say, what's this guy going to do in the future? What's he doing right now? If he's a Zakai now, if he's pure and innocent right now, he's just a child, we save him. We don't look towards the future. So the Reim asks the obvious question, which we're pretty much familiar with. I don't understand. Hashem looks at Yishmael and says, yeah, in the future he's going to do Averos, but right now he's an innocent, pure little child, like a pinch his cheeks. It's not worth killing him at this point. But by the Ben Sor Amora, who's taka on a path towards evil, but right now he hasn't yet killed, he hasn't yet stolen in a real way, he hasn't yet broken Shabbos, he hasn't yet done all of these Averos that would warrant some intense punishment like this, certainly not a chi of skila. So Al Shem Sofo Nerag, there we do judge by the future? So what is going on over here? Isn't that a contradiction? Isn't that a stira? Do we look at the current or would you look at the future? That's the Re'im's question. So the Maharal goes on to quote the answer that the Re'im gave and he disputes it. He doesn't like it. But the Maharal here offers a very fundamental answer, which opens a Pesach. It opens up a little bit of an insight into a deeper thought that the Maharal shares in so many places. We'll just touch the surface of it, but it's something I think which will shed light on a very interesting topic philosophically, fundamentally, and also something which we'll take with us going forward in terms of understanding what the Torah is supposed to mean to us. If you look in the third line, in the bold, at the very end, v'yesh l'tareitz. The lo kasha mid, there's no kasha, there's no question over here. D'hadakamar eina adam nidon el lefi ma'isav sha'os ha'shah. This that the Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah, that we judge ba'asher hu sham, as the person is right now, that's hainu bedin based in shalmaila. That's when we're talking about the heavenly tribunal, the heavenly court. The heavenly court looks at a person and says, how is he right now? We judge him based on right now. We're going to kill him if he's bad. We're going to save him if he's good. That's the upper heavenly courts, the upper courts. Lefisha ein roi ladan ela kefi osa sha, because it makes sense. Why should I judge a person based on what he's going to do? Did he do anything yet? No, so we'll save him right now. Makes sense, correct? That's the heavenly court. Says the Maharal, aval based in shalmata, done in Al Shem Sofo. This world's courts, meaning a regular Beis Din that judges a person in this world, that looks towards the future and is preemptive. It judges based on something that's going to happen in the future. Now, pause for a second. Does anyone think that makes sense? Opposite. The opposite. Why is the opposite? The Beis Din Shalmala knows the future, exactly. The Beis Din Shalmala knows what's going to happen. So they know this kid's going to be Yishmael and it's going to be the Arabs that are going to kill us. And they know that this Ben Sor Amora is going to be in the future. So they should be consistently judging in the future. The Beis Din Shalmata, right, the Beis Din Shalmata is looking at this, that's an excellent point, that's what the argument was. The Beis Din Shalmata is looking at the person in front of them, Ba'asher Husham, Ein L'dayin Elamasha Ein Avros. A regular judge in this world can't look towards the future. So it's the exact opposite, no? So you have to pay attention here. This is a gevaldig yesod we're about to uncover. That's the problem with the Maharal. But he tries to answer this in a very terse way. Kidei says, based in Shalmata Dan and Alshim Sofo, the tribunal, the court in this world, judges in the future. Kidei lahatzilo mi based in Shalmala. In order to save this person from being judged ultimately later on in the heavenly court, the ein dome onesh based in shalmala le based in shalmata. There's a difference between the two court cases. The based in shalmata, the lower courts, machrichin lakayim hamitzvah. The Gemara in Ksubas tells us that if a person says sukkah eini oseh, lulav eini notel, a person stands on sukkah and says, "I refuse to shake a lulav. I refuse to sit in sukkah." What do we do? So we force him, either us or the Beis Din. So let's say the Beis Din for now. The Gemara in Ksuba says we force him, meaning we take a baseball bat, we take a cattle prod, and we force the guy to go ahead and sit in sukkah or to take a lulav. Why? Because he has to keep mitzvahs. So we're machriach, we force him to do mitzvahs. That's the Beis Din's job. That doesn't sound very heavenly. Why not? Says the Maharal, u Beis Din Shalmala nosin rishus. The Beis Din Shalmala, the heavenly court, gives everyone free will to choose, do mitzvahs or don't do mitzvahs. The Beis Din Shalmata is apparently charged with going ahead and beating this guy over the head until he sits in a sukkah. How do you put that together? How does that make any sense? So if you look throughout the Maharal, Rav Hartman's been citing a few places, but I put just one for now. The next source in the sheet, the Gur Aryeh, back in Parshas Vayera, by the story where it comes up by Yishmael. So the Maharal explains in many places that the Beis Din Shalmata, the lower court, has a job. It has a tafkid. It has a something it's supposed to realize, a mission in this world. You know what the job of the Beis Din is in this world? The job of the Beis Din in this world is to try to make sure that you end up in Olam Haba. The job of the Beis Din in our earthly world, our earthly living, is to make sure that when a person's about to do an Aveira, we correct them. It's corrective measures in terms of punishing, as the Maharal here says in Parshas Vayera, punishing removes the iniquity. It helps offer a kapara to the person and allows them to then eventually enter Olam Haba. And in certain cases, a person refuses to do a mitzvah, the Beis Din Shalmata says, we're going to force him to do mitzvos. And in our case, the Beis Din Shalmata sees a young child is going off the derech, going to become a Ben Sor Amora with a terrible future, and it says, we're going to prevent that from happening. You know why? Because our job as a Beis Din is to make sure that this person ends up in Olam Haba. The Beis Din's job is to direct human beings in this world towards the ultimate goal of the next world. So the Beis Din Shel Shamayim is there to solve things after the world is over, after the person has gone to Shamayim. But the Beis Din Shel Mata is supposed to help us direct preemptively of that.
His mother is his kafara.
Oh, and we'll get back to that point soon. But yes, that's what the Gemara says. The Gemara says that kol amumsim mechuparim. What's the mumsim? Shakol amumsim miskaprim. That misa is a form of kapara. Yeah, there are chiluke kapara, meaning some averos don't require misa, some require suffering, some require more than misa. But within the realm of misa's based in, yeah, misa is mechaper. So that's what the Maharal says. It's because we don't understand the Basin's job is to do this. It is to help this child end up in Olam Haba. So it says, cut him off now at the root before he goes on the derech of Ben Sor Mor. Let's kill him ahead of time so that he's Yama Zaka. Yishmal was the Beis Din Shalmala. And they said, well, wait and see what happens. The kid has Bechira. The kid has a free will. He's able to wait. Hashem says, I'm not going to kill him. I'm going to wait by Asher Usham. That's what the Maharal suggests in our Parsha. A brilliant, beautiful idea. But he deepens it in Parshas Vayera. You wouldn't know this unless you look it up. But here in the next source, it's a continuation of that same piece. In Parshas Vayera, the Gur Aryeh says, Ve'od. Now, just to be clear, La'aniyaz Daiti, the Ve'od deepens the previous idea. Meaning what we're about to say, doesn't have to be a separate answer. What we're about to say might be the depth of what we said a second ago. However, the way the Maharal presents it, I admit, the ode might sound like it's a second answer. So you have to just figure out what the Maharal meant. But either way, this is so, so important. Such a yesod over here. The ode. Shebeisin atachton. How does the beisin of our world, the court system, how does it decide? How does it render a psak? How does it make a decision? Dan al piyat Torah, shenasim lanu HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem Yisbarach. We base our decisions, our court cases, our rendering of a psak, we base on what the Torah says that Hashem gave us, the Torah, correct? V'alpi ha-Torah, in the bold second line, v'alpi ha-Torah, chayiv ben sora mora. The Torah says that ben sora mora is chayiv. Anu dano so b'din shal achshav. He says it's not a future-oriented psak. We think of it at al shem sofo, because Chazal say it that way. It is al shem sofo in the predictive sense. But the Torah says al shem ata, al shem right now, the ben sora mora is chayiv misa. So on our vantage point, it's for the future. But why is the Beis Din killing him? Because the Torah says to kill him right now, for where he's holding right now. Why would that be? So look in the bold in the middle. Vizelo kasha, lama tziva Torah ladino sol shem sofo. Very good. The Torah says to kill him now, so it's a current thing. But the Torah is telling him to tell us to kill him now, al shem sofo, because of what he's going to do in the future. Why would it do that? That's not a kasha, says the Maharal. Why? This is amazing. Sha Torah tikun l'chol davar al shem sofo. Ki yachachma v'adas shenasan lanu. Says the Maharal, that's what Torah is. Torah is the entity, is the guiding force in our lives that makes sure that we're going yashar, that makes sure that we're being mesukan, that makes sure that we're heading in the right direction. Like we said a second ago about the basin, says the Maharal, that's what the entire Torah is about. The entire Torah is a guide for us. It's a guidebook telling us where to go. And the goal is to end up with dveikus, clinging to Hashem. The goal is to end up with an olam haba. So the Torah tells us exactly how to get from point A to point B. If we were on our own, we'd be toa baderech. We'd be straying all over the place. But the Torah gives us exact directions, exact guide on how to get from where we are right now to the ultimate goal of a life of ruchnius and ultimately dveikus and ultimately olam haba. The Torah gives us that way. The Torah is entirely al shem sofo. Everything about the Torah is a recipe for some product. Everything about the Torah is a step in the directions of how to end up somewhere else. Ben Sora Mor is not an exception. It's the rule. Everything in Torah, every rule, and every halacha, and every punishment, and every circumstance, it's all with the ultimate goal of guiding us towards the light of Olam Haba. And he said this so beautifully in so many places, but if you look here on the bottom, the Nesivos Olam, Nesiv HaTorah in the very beginning, you have the same thing in Tiferet Yisrael Perek Tes. I only copied very little of it for you, but if you look inside, you'll find beautiful things to go along with this. But the Maharal says, that's what the word Torah means. What's the shorish of the word Torah? We've spoken about it in the Sfasems a little bit. What's the shorish of the word Torah?
Hora'a.
What does Hora'a mean? To teach, to guide, to instruct, exactly. The Torah is the instruction. It shows us how to get from point A to point B. It's also referred to as a derech. The Torah is referred to as derech. It's a way. It's a path. The Maharal says a beautiful mashal. I didn't put it on the sheet. But he says, when you ask someone for directions and they say, this is the good way to go. So what do they mean when they say, this is the good way to go? I'll give you the best directions.
They're quickest.
Right. They don't mean it's the scenic route. The scenic route is not the best way to go. It might be the most enjoyable way. You might take in a lot of nice sights. But the best way to go is the place that gets you from A to B in the most efficient manner. So the Maharal says, Torah is the derech. It's the horah. It's the way. It'll get you to that point. If you follow the Torah carefully, you'll end up where you want to end up, where the Torah, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you to end up, because the Torah is a moreh derech. It instructs us, it directs us the proper way to get from here to the ultimate goal of where we want to get to. A side point, elsewhere in the Maharal, he explains how the Torah also offers directions on how to enjoy this world, and also offers directions on how to understand chachma of the entire world. So it's not limited. But the one thing we have to take out of the Maharal that we're learning now is that we sometimes think of Torah as supposed to yield, you know, immediate benefits. We're supposed to see the geshmak, see the inspiration, feel the... That is sometimes true. We do glean ta'amei ha-mitzvos. We do get a geshmak in learning. We do enjoy mitzvos and spending time being involved in avodas Hashem. But that's not what Torah is ultimately. Torah ultimately is a horah. It's instructive in terms of a goal that's way down in our future. All of Torah is Al Shem Sofo. The Ben Sora Mor represents that for us. That the Ben Sora Mor is killed now because that's the direction he's heading. The Torah has to redirect history and make sure that he doesn't end up Chas V'Shalom in the wrong place. So we kill him now to make sure he ends up in Olam Haba before he ends up going down the wrong path in the future. Unbelievable from the Maharal. That's the essence of Torah. Torah Milashon Hara. If you look in source number 2, on page number 2, we have the psukim that tell us that when a person gets violates an isser lav in the Torah, he gets malkos. In most cases, he gets malkos. So the Torah tells us that what happens with malkos, you get arbayim malkos, right? You get 40 malkos? Not really, right? The Torah says, v'hayim bin hakos rasha, v'ipilu ashovi v'ikau lefanav kedei rasha. So they hit him, bin mispar, the number, arbayim yakenu, hit him 40 times, don't do anything more, don't do anything less. Sometimes less if he can't absorb that many hits. So Rashi here quotes Chazal, who say that Arbaim is lav dafka. It doesn't really mean 40. How many malkos do you really get? 39. This happens elsewhere in the Torah. The Torah says, Tisbru chamishim yom, by Sfiras Omer. How many days do we count? 49, not 50. It's a question, the Mefarshim, how to resolve that. Maybe we do count the 50th by celebrating Shavuos for another time. Maybe this is related, maybe not, but the Rishonim think it is. The Pesukim tell us that Yaakov Avinu and his family went down to Mitzrayim, Shivim Nefesh, right? 70 souls, 70 people went down to Mitzrayim. How many people can we really count? 69. You have to do some math to see if your Chevet counts, but it's a question why the Torah always goes, you know, in the full number, in a tens or something like that, as opposed to the lesser number that it really means. Either way, here the Rashi points out, based on grammar, I wish we had time to get into the Rashi, what's bothering Rashi and how he explains it here. You look inside, you'll see for yourself. But the Mispar Arbayim is Lav Dafka, it really means 39. So if it really means 39, what's the obvious question? Write it that way. Why does the Torah write Arbayim Yakenu if it means 39? So the Maharal, in the smaller font here, you have it in Oz Gimel in Source 2. The Maharal quotes two answers. We're not going to get into them now. They are worthwhile to read on your own time. But then he says his own answer. He notes, as the previous answers also noted, that the entire concept of 40, of hitting 40 times, is based on the fact that there's a, after conception, there's a 40-day period in which the baby is formed, the fetus is formed. So within the first 40 days after conception, we assume the fetus to be maya ba'alma. It's really just water. It's not really have any form at that point yet. We're not talking halachically now, but it does have halachic implications. But in the first 40 days, we see it as an ambiguous sort of entity. It's not really anything. After 40 days, it becomes more of a guf, more of a something. So it takes 40 days of creation. So the Maharal says that it's interesting when you think about it. Those 40 days, you have to figure out where he got this from. It's maybe a Gemara in Sanhedrin, that's questionable. But the Maharal says, during the course of those 40 days, the process is as follows. Day 1, day 2, day 3, day 4, all the way up to day 39, the body is crafted. The body is created. The guf, the physical entity of this fetus, is created. What happens on day 40? The neshama is put into the body. Says the Maharal, Givaldik. Listen, this is so beautiful. The Maharal says like this. He says, for the first 39 days, the body is created. The 40th day, the neshama is created. We said the malkos that a person is supposed to get, the lashes a person gets for violating an avera, correspond to the 40 days of creation. When a person does an avera, what did the avera? He's made up of guf and neshama, correct? What did the avera? Who performed the avera? The guf or the neshama? The guf. Now the neshama got dragged along. You know, oyla rasha, oyla shcheinam. The neshama shouldn't have been involved in this. The neshama was there and should have had a bigger impact. But the neshama got dragged along. Your body does the avera. Your body committed the sin. So we hit him one time, and we hit him two times, and we hit him three times, corresponding to every day of creation of this Vlad, every day of creation of his body, of this fetus that became this person. And on day 39, we hit him, and then what happened? We hit him all of the malkos that correspond to his body. So it's true, the neshama was nitmeis. The neshama was sullied by the avera because it was connected to a guf that did an avera. But after 39 lashes, that guf has been purified. And if the guf is purified, what happens to the neshama? It too is absolved. It too is now no longer dirtied by the sin. So that 40th lash, we don't need to give him. That 40th whipping we can hold back on because the 39 takes care of it because we already cleansed the body, which is really the thing that committed the Avera in the first place. You look in the Bera Gola, I copied it for you here. He gives a pshat in the Pasuk based on this. We don't have time for it. But this is the Yesod that goes across the Maharal in many Svarim, that the Maharal always explains that the body is responsible for our Averos, not the Neshama. That doesn't absolve of us of responsibility. That doesn't say that we're not accountable for what we do. Adrabah, we're given our body to control it in order to use the vessel that Hashem gave us on loan in order to use it for mitzvos and not for averos chas v'shalom. But it's the body which does the averos. He says a fascinating thing. I don't remember where, but he says that on Yom Kippur, one of the processes we do on Yom Kippur for atonement is the seir lazazel. So a seir is a goat, correct? What's the shoresh of seir? Sin ayin resh. What else does that mean?
Yes.
Hair. Now, a goat is hairy, but is there a deeper meaning to that? So I believe the Maharal says somewhere that it's a reference to our averos. Our averos are attached to our body like hair, absolutely. They're our hair. Our averos grow from our body. But hair, is that part of your body? What can you do to hair? Cut it right off. It may grow back. It may come back. You might even wax it, it might come back. But you can cut the hair off. It's not really a part of you. So he says, Seir Lazazel and Yom Kippur shows us that the averos that we do, they're our guf, but they're not our neshama. They're not our etzem, they're not our mahus, they're not our essence, the averos. They're there and we have to shave them, we have to get rid of them, we have to do tshuva, but that's not who you are. That's not who you are. So here in the Gur Arya, the Maharal says, this yesod, the guf did the averos, so hit him 39 times. But once you've solved the guf, the neshama automatically is solved as well because the neshama is no longer associated with a dirty guf. Isn't that unbelievable? So the Torah had to set arbaim. The Torah had to say 40 because you deserve 40 malkos. 40 malkos for 40 days of creation. But once you hit him 39 times, you've solved that 40th day as well. Unbelievable from the Maharal. Yes, yeah. To figure that out. Right. And he was covered with hair also, right? Right. It's, maybe he's different, meaning he was born with it, right? It's more inherent to him. Beautiful. Very beautiful. I don't know if anyone says that. It's a gorgeous idea. We'll do this last part quickly. I just want to at least give you the Maharal Malkum source number 3. The psukim tell us that if a person is motzi shemra, meaning gets married, and then he claims that his wife was not a basula, she was not a virgin, and he shows the whole world, hey, she was already ba'ula's baal, so it turns out he was lying. It turns out he was making it up. So v'anshu osam mea kesef, he pays a fine for having lied, for having said worse than lashon hara, tarnished reputation, right? Spread a rumor, so he has to pay $100, 100 kesef, mea kesef. So the Mishnah tells us in Maseches Arachin, the source number 3, the Nesivas Olam and Nesivas Shalom, in the second parak, the Maharal quotes this, the Mishnah tells us that you see from here that sinning with your mouth is worse than sinning with your body. If a person commits rape, which physically speaking is like one of the worst averas a person could possibly commit against another person, it's a terrible thing, rape, onus. So if a person does that, you know how much they owe?
50.
And if you say, not Lashon Hara, but you tarnish someone's reputation, you lie and say she wasn't a basula, how much do you owe?
100.
So the Mishnah says, oh, look, your speech is worse than your words. Yeah, so he says, your speech is worse than your words. Your speech is worse than your actions. So the Maharal says there's a depth here. Actions, and this is related to what we said before. Actions are part of your guf, correct? Now, a person is made up of two entities, guf and neshama, guf and seichel, guf and his brain, his logic, his spirit, his ruach, the more metaphysical parts of him. So when I commit an act with my guf, I'm representing one part of me, and I am sinning with it. But it's only half of me. So I only owe that much to the victim or to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When a person uses their koach hadibor, their speech, you know what they're using? All of their faculties. Because what speech represents, it's the physical expression of what's going on in your mind. It's the physical expression of what's ruchnius, of what's metaphysical to you. You take your thoughts and you bring them into this world through your mouth. So when I sin with my body, I owe 50, half of 100. 100 is a full number. I owe half because I use my body to do an avera. When I use my mouth to do an avera, I owe 100, the whole thing, because I've used every part of me. I've used my seichel through my tongue, through my physicality, to express some terrible avera. I owe it entirely. And if you look, we don't have time for it now, but if you look in the Nesiv HaShtika in the very beginning, the Maharal explains how the person being silent really expresses the highest level of seichel, the highest level of chachma, of wisdom, because when a person uses his seichel to speak, that's close to being completely separate, completely metaphysical, because he's expressing thoughts which are higher level than actions, which are higher level than physicality. When a person's silent, he's utilizing his thoughts, his seichel, his metaphysical nature, without even expressing it in physicality. So when a person is just thinking, when a person is just misbodeh, he's just alone with his thoughts, he's at the highest level of being separate from this world, of just being involved in what's above, in his logic, in his seichel, in his ruach, in his spirit. But the second a person takes that and brings it down to words, it's the next closest thing to kol ruchnius, but it's a little bit of a lower level, and that's why shtika is such a siag to chachma. That's why shtika is one of the midos that a chacham has. The Mishnah Pirkei Avos says much more to discuss. We don't have time to get into it now, but that accounts for the Mishnah in Arachin, that the avera that a person does with his guf is at a lower level in terms of it's at less severe than a avera you do with your speech, because again, your body is not you. Your neshama is you, and your speech is what represents your neshama in your physicality. Okay, we'll stop here. B'siyat d'shmai. Everyone should have a wonderful Shabbos.